Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. State lawmakers are set to return to Raleigh this week for yet another special legislative session, and it appears that the state court system, in the hope of Republican legislative leaders to change how North Carolina selects its judges, could top the agenda. Alicia Bannon of the New York-based Brennan Center for Justice examines court reform plans in states throughout the country. Recently, she talked to our producer Clayton Hinkle about her impressions of what's being discussed in North Carolina.
Alicia, thank you very much for taking a few moments to talk to us on News and Views today.
Thank you for having me.
I want to get your thoughts about some of the bills that have passed in 2017, namely House Bill 100 that restored partisan elections in our state, other bits of legislation that would eliminate the judicial primary, reducing the percentage of votes that are needed to win. When you're looking at the number of bills that have been passed in North Carolina, what do you think? What do you think is happening to North Carolina's judiciary?
Well, I think it's a worrying trend. I do think that you can look at the set of bills and, you know, both the sheer number of bills that are targeting the courts and then specifically what those bills have focused on and see an effort that seems designed to increase partisan control over the judiciary and kind of gain political advantage. And, you know, that's bad for the integrity of North Carolina's court system. It's bad for public confidence that courts are going to be able to do their job and, you know, decide cases based on their understanding of what the law requires, putting aside any kind of political or partisan preferences, and certainly putting aside any kind of political pressure.
Have we seen this happening in other states, or is it just North Carolina?
So there have been a host of bills around the country that have been targeting state courts. I would say North Carolina has the, I guess, questionable honor of being out ahead in terms of, you know, having actually passed so many of these bills. But there have been efforts in a number of states, you know, similar to what we've seen in North Carolina, where there have been efforts at least to change how judges are selected, the amount of political control that the political branches of government have over the courts, and other efforts to limit courts' independence and ability to sort of focus on the law when they're deciding cases.
Is there one bill in particular that raises concern for you, or is it just the fact that there have been so many bills so quickly that the public really hasn't had a chance to get their heads wrapped around it?
Well, I think that's a great question. I think one of the laws that passed that I thought was particularly troubling last year was the measure that reduced the size of North Carolina's intermediate appellate court, which, you know, had the function of taking away the governor's ability to then make interim appointments when those seats became empty. What I thought was really striking was that that wasn't a court-led measure. There wasn't an effort to figure out exactly, you know, how many judges the court needed in order to be effective. It seemed much more to be focused on, you know, how can we gain some sort of partisan or political advantage in terms of the composition of that court. And that's not good for the court system. It's certainly not good for public perceptions of the courts in the state.
Another provision that we're going to hear a lot more about in 2018 is increasing voter accountability. That piece of legislation would reduce all judicial races and seats to two-year terms. And I know that there is some concern that just the overturn there would constantly have judges running for office, not necessarily focused on their job on the bench, but really getting reelected.
I think having judges in a constant campaign mode is really dangerous. You know, I mean, we've already seen in the elections in North Carolina and around the country that already they've become highly politicized, they attract a lot of money, and they put a lot of pressure on judges in ways that aren't healthy. Because ultimately, the job of a judge is to decide a case based on his or her understanding of what the law requires. And sometimes that's not popular. Sometimes what the law requires isn't what people like. Sometimes it's not what funders like. Sometimes it's not what legislators like or politicians like. And it's really important that judges have the level of insulation that they can do their job and decide those cases based on the law. So reducing terms so that judges are constantly in a campaign mode is going to put a tremendous amount of pressure on them and I think really undermine that role that they need to play.
Another proposal that is gaining traction is merit selection in North Carolina. Our Chief Justice has said that that is something that he favors. We know the Senate President Pro Tem also favors it, but we've also heard from people who say that the devil is in the details when it comes to merit selection.
I think you're exactly right that the details would really matter. And I should say, at least some of the proposals that I've heard, I wouldn't characterize as a merit selection system. You know, for a merit selection system to work well, you know, first off, you really need to have, well, just say what a merit selection system is. You know, usually how that functions is that you have a nominating commission that considers potential judges, vets them, interviews them, checks references, goes through a whole process, and then creates a short list. And then that short list typically goes to the governor, and the governor has to choose from one of the candidates on that short list and then that person would become a judge. You know, the composition in particular of that nominating commission is really important. So, you know, for example, if you had a nominating commission that was made up entirely of plaintiff's lawyers, then you might wonder, like, gee, are the people they're putting forward, are they really going to be fair and unbiased in these cases, or are they picking people that they think might be, you know, more likely to vote on their side? If you have a commission that's entirely made up of Democrats or entirely made up of Republicans, it's going to raise those questions. So you really need to have a commission that has broad representation, both in terms of who has the power to appoint commissioners and the membership of the commission, that you really have diversity on a number of different measures. And if you don't have those safeguards, then there can be a real risk that you actually reproduce some of the problems that we see in the election context, you know, a lot of special interest influence, a lot of politicization, but it just happens behind closed doors.
Talk a little bit more about that. If we do have this nominating commission, how do we make sure that it is transparent, and how do we make sure that it is operating in the most ethical manner possible?
I think that it would need to be written into the system. So I think you would want to have a system that is, you know, that is open and transparent. So there are some states where when a vacancy opens, there's a job listing, there's a formal application. The commissions hold open meetings, have open interviews, their votes are made public. So the public can really see what's happening and see if, you know, for example, the commission is divided into factions or is, you know, not operating in a way that seems desirable, that the public can see that and hold people accountable. Similarly, you really want to have strong ethics rules for commissioners. So, for example, you know, one problem that's happened in some states is that commissioners end up having behind-the-scenes conversations with the governor or with legislators when the process is ongoing. And that is, you know, obviously really undermines the commission's ability to be independent and to play a role in insulating politics from the process. And so you want to have ethics rules that limit how commissioners can interact with judicial candidates as well as with political officials.
Talk a little bit about the importance of collecting diversity data. I know that's something the Brennan Center is interested in for this commission, but also for the bench.
So, I mean, diversity is a tremendously important value. I mean, diversity on the bench, it enhances judicial decision-making, it increases the legitimacy of the court in the public's eye. And in North Carolina and in states around the country, state courts really lag in terms of reflecting the diversity of the communities that they serve, as well as the legal profession as a whole. And one of the hurdles to addressing that issue is that we tend to have really bad data. So it's actually hard to even know. A lot of data isn't even kept in terms of various diversity metrics. So you can't even know where the problems are because you don't actually know what the composition of the bench really looks like. And in the context of a merit selection system or using a nominating commission process, one way of ensuring that that process enhances diversity on the bench would be keeping diversity data at all of the different phases of the commission's consideration so that you can see, are you attracting a diverse set of candidates in the first instance? Is there an issue with the pipeline? Are there issues perhaps at the deliberation phase where, you know, diverse candidates aren't making it through the process? And then that can be something to better understand why. When you keep data, then you can better understand kind of what the hurdles actually are and then take steps to address them.
As you look at other states that have gone forward with merit selection, are there states that have done it well? Are there states that we would look at and say, wow, we don't want to go down that path?
In many states, merit selection systems have worked well. I'd point to Hawaii as one example of a state that's had a very successful merit selection system. Colorado is another state. So there are definitely many states that have had very successful processes. I think usually if you look at them, among other things, they do have nominating commissions with diverse membership. relationships. They have transparent processes that enhance public confidence in the process and in the system. You know, there are also states that it has not gone so well. So, for example, in Rhode Island, which adopted a merit selection system in 1994, they've had a number of issues with their commission showing signs of politicization. So, for example, commissioners having behind-the-scenes conversations with the governor actually interviewing judicial candidates before the nominating commission even put forward the names. And if you look at who the commissioners were, you've seen the governor and the legislature putting forward lobbyists to actually serve on the commissions. So in a lot of dimensions, it kind of raises concerns that this commission isn't really serving that job of insulating judicial selection from special interest influence and kind of these strong political forces.
And finally, for the public that may not have everyday interaction with the court, why is it so important that they continue to stay attuned to what is happening with our judiciary and particularly the independence of our courts?
Well, because courts are extremely important. You know, in terms of state courts, nationally about 95% of all cases are filed in state courts. And those courts hear cases that impact our rights, our pocketbooks, they can impact our health. You know, they hear a host of cases on everything from education to the environment to voting rights and redistricting. So these are issues that really matter to people's everyday life. And judicial selection plays a huge role in the extent to which those courts are going to be sufficiently insulated that they can really do their job and fulfill their function as the branch of government that's supposed to not put aside politics and focus on what the law requires.
Well, thank you so much for taking a few minutes with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Up next, a mom from Cary tells us why she couldn't remain on the sidelines in the battle over the future of North Carolina's public schools.